Good afternoon, greater Philadelphia area. This is Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB, 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Sarah Timon. She's Stacy Mitchell. And we all work with the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline. But we have got a very special guest. This is the biggest guest we've had, guys, hands down. Ben Balak, Beverly Hills super agent.
Realtor.
So close enough. And star of Buying Beverly Hills on Netflix and a good friend of mine in all seriousness, part of the Tom Ferry ecosystem. Ben, how do you want people to get in touch with you? BenBalak.com, is that the place to go?
By design, it's really hard to not find me. So
okay,
if you
good.
Can't find me, then like you probably shouldn't reach out.
Just Google him.
But
is what
yeah,
he's saying.
My last name is spelled B-E-L-A-C-K, despite everyone's poor pronunciation thereof. So if you just type in Ben Balak anywhere, I'm right there.
Most importantly, Philadelphia native, which I don't think you tell people out in L.A. so they don't look down on you. But here we celebrate that stuff. So. Mm-hmm. We are happy to have you on, my friend, and we are always streaming live every single week on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Just look up Tom Tool Sales Group. So we're going to talk about Ben in the last segment like we always do with our guests. We're going to lead off with some real estate news, and then we've got my favorite segment of the whole year, Turkeys of the Year, coming up in segment two. So we'll run through all of it. First, there was some news on Inman, and this is not surprising to me. I want to get everyone's take on this, and especially yours, Ben, being coming from a different market. Inman and Redfin both reported that we saw a 32.1% decline in sales in the month of October. And on top of that, we also saw a 17% cancellation rate of pending sales. So my question is this news kind of one of those clickbaity headlines where they're giving it a unique sort of comparison? What was the month of October like? Tell us more what you guys are seeing out in the field.
I'm not surprised that there was a decline in the number of sales. What did kind of grab my attention there was the percentage of deals that were pending that kind of fell apart. I know for me, and it like specifically mentions, you know, like interest rates and everything in there. I'd be curious for, you know, what time frame they were looking to close in. And I know for me on the listing side, I'm very carefully looking at that section of what is an acceptable interest rate to make sure that we're covered there. That number was surprising to me.
So to answer your question, this was based on the September data. So it was a 32% decline from September, which again, it's not a great comparison because we typically have more of a seasonal flow to business here than we do in other areas like California, where I think it's you have more of a kind of a, I mean, maybe we don't, I don't know. But I know up here in the Northeast, like once the fall hits, things kind of slow down a little bit.
I think with the Fed incrementally raising rates in the way that they have, this is the data that we're going to see on cancellations, because my guess is there's a meaningful portion of those cancellations, sadly, that are people that were pre-approved at a certain number, and then either they or their agent didn't stay in touch with the lender, and then when it came time to underwrite with new interest rate, then they canceled. And I think what's sad is that the compound effect of the conversations that we have with our clients, as well as the headlines, that is the market.
Mm-hmm.
That is the market. So I think that what's sad is when a headline like this, designed to be clickbaity, and I don't fault them for that. All the content we make in this room is somewhat designed to be
yes.
clickbaity, right? So we're not absolved of that. I do think that once we see interest rates raises become a little bit more predictable and flat, we will see lower rates of cancellations, because as we all know, people buy and sell because in the majority based on life change, and those life changes don't stop their course because of an interest rate change in the macro.
Well said. Stace, what's your take on this? I mean, you're rocking and rolling. You're doing what, 6-7 deals a month now at this point? So what are you saying?
Teach me.
They probably equal one of your sales, would be my guess. We'd be on $250,000 listing here, Ben, not $1 million listing.
As Ben said, most of my clients are motivated. There's a purpose for their buying and selling. So the interest rates aren't really affecting them as much. They're well prepared. But I agree. I think that the cancellation rate that happened over that time period, September to October, was most likely based because of those interest rates. They did go up pretty quickly, which put a lot of people out of the market. And they would have to, if they were on that cusp anyway of being at their upper price point and something like that would happen, it's going to just upset the apple cart and they would have to terminate, unfortunately. And it's a shame for them because they would have to either, you know, reevaluate what they can afford or wait. But we see that there was interest rate drop, which was very exciting. So what I'm seeing based on that is some folks coming back into the fold. So I had a good couple of weeks where people were coming back into the market because they felt that with the inventory that we're seeing that's increased and also days on market, there's more opportunity for them to actually get their offer accepted, maybe even under asking price, maybe inspections, you know, so there's definitely been some positives.
Wait, I don't understand. I feel like this, the market where it is right now, this is good news, everyone. It's good news.
Yeah. It's 100% good news because, you know, and I think, you know, Stacey and Sarah both got into real estate right around like 2019, 2020. So we've been doing this a lot longer. I really preferred the like the 2018, 19 market versus 2020, 2021, where it was, okay, you have to work all the time. You have no time for people to make decisions. You deal at a higher price point than we do, so I'm sure it's even as, if not more, stressful for some of these folks. I see this as a good thing because it's going to get rid of some of these realtors that shouldn't be selling real estate in the first place. And then on top of that, we've seen rates kind of come back down a little bit, and it's shocking to me how many agents are not talking about this with their clients. I mean, that's been a very – I mean, we talked about this on the Jeff Mays call we had today with our team, where some people were like, what do you mean rates went down? Or oh, they went down a little bit. And these are other agents that are in the same ecosystem that Ben and I got to know each other in, and they're just like, ah, whatever. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is a major difference no matter what the price point is. So I don't I see this as very positive news overall.
I just think for consumers, like I started making money later in my life because I was pursuing a career as an actor, and like I got into real estate like really late, and so I was like stacking cash, and then the market it was approaching 2019, and I was like, okay, I'm a buyer. And then what happened for everyone. But like now that interest rates have gone up and it's less voracious and not everything's in multiples and people aren't giving up their firstborn and inspections and waiving all these things, I think as real estate agents, we should want an environment where our clients are not writing blank checks in inspections, meaning at time of offer. They should get to due diligence. Like, it's okay. We want them to know what they're buying. It's the biggest purchase of their life. No one should have to deal with sticker shock. And like, I personally right now, I'm a home buyer in Los Angeles. I am a home buyer. I am looking for a house. Granted, I'm looking for a deal now because I think maybe those homes that were listed for 60 days and the agent that they currently have or their last agent before there was an expired relaunch have been beating them up so much. And maybe now they're getting to that point where they're like, I just want this done before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So like I'm on the hunt and it's an exciting time for me because I want to lob in a low ball and I'm just like, sorry, what else? You've been on for 60 days, you know? You can't just have like your agent now being like, oh, well, there's three people circling. I'm like, cool. Call me when they're not. And they're like, wait.
You know?
You're going to see a lot of that too. And I think that agents walk a very careful line there with like panic buying and like ethics. They're like, oh, we got other people interested. And it's like we've had this conversation internally at our team where I forget who said it, but they're like, I want to call this guy and say, hey, that's BS. I don't believe you. And we're going to put in an escalation clause to protect ourselves or something else like that. So when you have the experts looking to buy now, and Ben is absolutely an expert, I think that's when you want to pay attention. I mean, Warren Buffett said you want to buy when people don't.
Yes.
I think that's a very smart decision on your part. And L.A. is probably uber competitive. I mean,
and so expensive.
Yeah.
In the last few years, like Los Angeles, you know, for so long, L.A. was kind of like the redheaded stepchild to New York and San Francisco. And also built in, we don't have vertical inventory. We're just not a city like Miami that has all of these condos. So once the advent of telecommuting really became in vogue where people could work from anywhere, people were like, oh, wow, you know, I can buy a condo in New York for let's say $2,500 a square, or in London, even worse. And then I can go to LA and get, I'm not kidding, like an emotional view for, at that time, $1,200, $1,500 a square. And you know, when I say emotional, I mean emotional.
What's that?
So tell us more. We sell...
We're from Philly here. Yeah, come on, what's an emotional
view? I am from here. Yeah.
So obviously there's different types of views, right? There can be a canyon view, which is like really pretty and serene, but at night it's nothing, right? Similar to an ocean view, by the way. Mm-hmm. You just hear it. Mm-hmm. And then there's city lights views. But then there's types of views where the view starts to envelop you and the senses the moment you hit the front door. Kind of the beauty of LA is that we have a mountain range running through it. So, and that mountain range runs west to east. So what happens is you have all of these homes on each side of the ridge facing pretty much north or south, which is tremendous for light exposure and view either of the San Fernando Valley, when you've heard in the past, like, oh, she's a valley girl, right? or if you wanna look down at the city of Los Angeles. And relatively speaking to other metropolitan cities that were already just so expensive, LA just seemed like a relative bargain. So in our last cycle, it's just become so incredibly, incredibly expensive. But despite the headlines that you're seeing out there, many of these pedigree neighborhoods were running like a month and a half worth of inventory. Now we're 3 months. So when I call expired listings and I say to people, like, you know, they're like, we're not selling, we're taking off the market. I say, okay, cool. Well, like, is it still important to you to sell at the top of the market? Well, yeah, because they don't want to seem like they're not savvy.
Right.
And I say, okay, cool. Well, like, what data are you seeing that suggests we're not still at the top of the market? And getting into that conversation has been actually really exciting lately because we get to kind of unwind and educate.
Well, we talked about this last week, and I know that one of the big topics was the skill set required to succeed next year or even right now versus the past 2 years. And I'm sure you've seen this. I think we had the conversation that in LA, if you sell like three homes, you think you're a big deal, right? Here, it's, I think it's like 10 is kind of the number.
I think you just live there, you think you're a big
deal.
It's all it takes.
But you get the point, right? And especially in this industry. So you're talking about having market-based conversations with people, sharing this sort of data. One of the stories I think people tell themselves when they get into a higher price point, for us, it's $1 million. For you, obviously, it's way higher. But that premium price point is that they don't want to hear it or they're well-informed. So how often do you find yourself having to educate your clients with this kind of data and showing them what's going on, and how receptive are they to it?
Well, all the time. We're constantly educating. This is a market which is for the knowledge broker.
Mm-hmm.
Sadly, as I mentioned before, right, the compound effect of conversations is our market, and there's a lot of negative propaganda out there. Right now, I don't think you should ever take yourself out of the market. Sure, 63% of homeowners right now have a 3% interest rate or better. That is going to have an effect. Some people just aren't going to move, but there are people that still need to move, and there's still plenty of money to be made on that sale. Sadly, for the real estate professional who from summer of 2020 to March of 2022, they were cashiers.
Order takers.
Yeah, they were order takers. So now...
Same thing.
Yeah. So now we have to unwind some of those feelings. I guess the difference is between my market and yours is that from a wealth perspective, Los Angeles doesn't have industry. We had aerospace, which left in the 70s, and what's left is pretty much entertainment. And aside from Oprah, Geffen, Spielberg, Bezos, entertainment people, relatively speaking, don't make a ton of money. So, but they do have very strong feelings. And so when you have someone who has strong feelings that has made money, and that supports kind of those feelings. It's self-serving. We have to do even more work in a nuanced and empathic way to help them understand that maybe they are ill-informed, actually, and that a try again may be worth it.
Well said. So I got one question here. We're going to wrap up this segment about the cancellations we kind of hit on with some of the Fed movement, the mortgage rates, the decline in October sales. I think everyone kind of saw that across the board. I mean, we saw 30% down nationally. October was the worst month we've had in 3 or 4 years. Mm. What do we see happening month to date? And how do you envision December playing out before we get into the new year? What do you think happens in the market, guys?
I mean, I think that that's the time frame for motivated buyers. If you're going and sellers, if you're out there, you're putting yourself out there during these months where it's so easy to say, I'm just going to hold off until next year. I think you're a motivated individual, and there's plenty of opportunity there to get quite a few more deals in before the end of the year.
I think that with the inflation coming down a little bit, the elections are over. I think there was a lot of uncertainty up until that point. So I believe that a lot of people were holding off and just waiting to see what's going to happen. You know, is it going to be like total calamity, or is there some light at the end of the tunnel? So I think people are in a more comfortable place because there was so much. I mean, there's always negativity out there, but there were, I mean, more so.
Extra negativity.
Extra. And it was in your face constantly, and you just can't get away from it. But I think now that that has subsided somewhat and the holidays are coming up, I think that people are feeling more optimistic. And that's what I'm seeing coming back in. I'm seeing people, you know, a renewed interest in getting into their homes. So I'm really, really optimistic about what's going to happen in December and into early next year.
Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be the tale of two markets. The sellers that price aspirationally are going to get punished. Mm-hmm. The ones that price at fair market value or to create competition will be rewarded.
I agree. Yeah.
I love all these opinions. And having seen, I agree with you about the elections here, probably more so than where you are in California. This was like the most hotly contested midterm mm-hmm. election I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, people were, the signs were up. It was not good. And I think you always get half and half. Mm-hmm. I don't really care who wins. To a certain extent, I'm just glad it's over from a business perspective.
Yes.
And I'm not getting political here. So I agree with you there. Ben, I also agree with you absolutely that there's going to be sellers. They're always the last ones to know that the market's changing. And they're like, well, this home last year, that house was a piece of junk up the street. And my house is nice. I've been in their home, Ben. And I mean, and like that's how those conversations go. The folks that are serious and are going to listen to their agents and the agents that can educate based on the market, they're going to be the ones that win. And I see a lot of agents getting out of the industry already. They're already making that move. So I do see opportunity for folks that are serious as long as we can communicate exactly what's going on in the market, which is always the challenge. So love the predictions. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. Turkeys of the Year, my favorite segment of the year. We do this every year, and I have to constantly remind Sarah what Turkey of the Year is because no one else gets it.
It's your favorite thing, and no one cares.
You know what? That sounds about right,
then.
They
don't care enough to even remember it.
You know what? I like it that way, and we'll just take the insult. So that's why I'm glad you're on, my friend. This is Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. We will be right back.
For the best local mortgage service and great rates on your money, look no further than Mortgage America. We've been operating in the greater Philadelphia area for 40 years with a focus on smooth, easy access to home purchasing. Whether you're a first-time buyer, upsizing or downsizing, or just refinancing, we have programs for you. We also have closing cost assistance programs and access to subsidized interest rates. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. To learn more, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com or give us a call at 610-439-8000. We always have a person available to take your call with around-the-clock human service. Purchase your home with the personalized, local service you find at Mortgage America.
Mortgage America is an equal housing lender. NMLS 128501.
Have you considered a career in real estate? Do you want control over your income? Whether you have a license or not, call us today at 610-692-6976 or visit TomTool.com. Join our team, the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline.
The Tom Tool Sales Group is the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania with over $165 million in volume for 2021. I'm Tom Tool, and our team has achieved that kind of success by being a great place to work with and to work for. No one knows Greater Philly better than we do. We know real estate, but more importantly, we're real people. We hire the best agents, and we give them all the tools to succeed. Even our brand new agents sell 17 to 24 homes a year because our team delivers the best experience in real estate. Teams deliver a better experience than individuals, and we're a top 1% real estate team in the country. We call it AAA service. We're your advocate, ally, and advisor. Because this isn't a transaction to us. It's a relationship. If you're buying or selling a home, call the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline at 610-692-6976 or visit TomTool.com. That's Tom, Tool with an E.com. Sell your home for more, and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool.
When you're getting a mortgage, you shouldn't have to sacrifice great service just to get a great rate. At Mortgage America, we've been lending with this philosophy for over 35 years. We have access to great low rates without the complications and delays of big or online banks. We're a local Pennsylvania lender with loan officers that you can actually meet. As PHFA's number one lender, we specialize in all residential mortgage programs, including first-time buyer programs and low down payment options. For your free pre-approval, call us at 610-439-8000 or apply online at mymortgageamerica.com.
Mortgage America is equal housing lender, NMLS 128501.
Welcome back to Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Stacy Mitchell. She's Sarah Time. And we've got Gabe behind the camera. And we all work at the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline, the number one RE/MAX team since 2018. And we have Beverly Hills Super Realtor, Netflix star. You know, he got on Netflix just to come on our AM radio show, is what I heard. He's been waiting for this.
That was my why.
That was your why, yes. Ben Balak is here from the agency out in Beverly Hills. Very grateful to have you on, my friend, Philadelphia native. So we're going to talk about turkeys of the year. So let me just define this for everybody. So a turkey is someone that made like a bonehead move. They did something stupid. They did something that was just ridiculous, and it did not pay off for them. Is that a good definition for everybody here?
Yep.
So in the honor of Thanksgiving, I've got a long list. I keep track of this stuff throughout the year. Sarah, who's your turkey of the year? Let's start with you.
I'm going to go with Putin and the war in Ukraine. I mean, okay. I don't know if that's like too political.
No,
but,
I don't think anyone supports what's going on there.
I don't think anybody's
it's not a party
that.
Issue.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I think that he would probably be my biggest turkey.
I mean, he's really forced the issue over that. This thing's still going on. I mean, it's... You know, it's one of these war. It kind of reminds me of the war in Iraq, where it just kept going on, and people just kind of live with it. So it's very unfortunate what's happening there. In all seriousness, way to bring down the mood with your real turkey for the year.
I think I need a nap.
Yeah, okay, you can just crawl under the desk, Ben. It'll be fine.
Yes,
I very legitimate. I mean, I don't think we need any explanation on that one.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. I would have to say my big turkey of the year is the CEO of FTX. If you haven't heard, Sam Bankman-Fried.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Have you seen this guy?
Yeah.
Like, who would I'm sorry. Let me be judgmental for a second. If you listen to him speak, okay, and you just look at him, he looks like he plays video games all day. Who would invest, like, millions and millions of dollars besides Tom Brady, Giselle, Michael Jordan, like all these mega stars and mega people dumped money into this guy's lap with no accountability. They were never provided any kind of statements or any kind of information on where their money was going. And the guy took full advantage, and he was out buying yachts and vacationing and living life in the Bahamas. So he's the biggest turkey, and it's going to get pretty ugly for him.
I think guys like that should give every real estate professional hope, because everyone who's afraid to open, everyone who's afraid to prospect, you don't have to be good to get the job or credible. No. You just have to be known. So just talk to enough people, and you too can get many millions from Tom Brady.
I
want to
know what
Giselle.
He said. What was his...
He just said it confidently. I don't even know that it matters necessarily, because what he said, they just believed, right? So,
I would love to have been the fly on the wall in the conversations that he had with these mega donors.
Yeah.
And up until the very last minute, he was still trying to get bailed out. He had talked to the CEO of Binance, and they almost had a deal. They almost had a deal until Binance did his due diligence, and he investigated further and realized it was just a sham.
Mm-hmm.
So he pulled out, and the big collapse. Unfortunately, for this person, for this one person with a couple of his minions, he has created this cascade and this collapse of a lot of other cryptos.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are losing a lot of money. It's really created a lot of uncertainty in that area, and I'm sure there's going to be more regulation coming in that arena based on this. So one person really caused a lot of damage. And there's already class action lawsuits, not only against him, but against all these people who they were out promoting.
Mm-hmm.
So it should be interesting to see how this unfolds.
There's a picture of him going around on the internet where he shaved and he missed right underneath his nostril. And I don't know how you talk about you two can have hope. If someone showed up like that, I would just immediately have him leave my house. And I'm like, look in the mirror before you shave. I don't get it.
Well, I know, but dude, your vibe attracts your tribe. There's someone that doesn't see that.
No, luckily, I'm not that person.
You see,
I'm with you, Tom.
You didn't miss.
I'm with you.
You didn't miss. By the way, you foreshadowed my turkey.
Oh, sorry.
I think there's a lot of turkeys in this arena here. This is a lot like Madoff.
Yeah,
it's bigger than Madoff.
But it's the same thing. People trusted him, and then, you know, I mean, maybe it's just that it shows that your sales pitch can matter, I think, to your point. If you really confidently believe in it, obviously his why is horrible. He's a criminal. You know, that stuff's all bad, but it's just like Madoff. Yeah. And there was a lot of smart people that got defrauded by Madoff, too. So
a lot of smart people, yeah. At least they were given statements, and they were fake statements. But,
yeah.
I mean, these folks weren't provided any information, and they still kept investing.
Yikes.
Crazy. Unreal.
That's a very sad one. Ben, what do you got here?
I would say anyone, this is a class of turkeys, I would, and I'm in it, would be anyone who bought crypto or NFTs. Anyone.
I still don't understand NFTs. We actually had a segment on here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this segment?
Yeah.
So you know the guy who did it. I'll tell you who it is later. It's a mutual friend of ours. And I was so dumbfounded. I still didn't understand everything. And I'm just like, you know what? Sounds great in theory, but I'm just going to go buy a rental property.
Yeah. And the thing is like we had a unique set of circumstances where like cash isn't worth what it was or you know what it normally was, and the thing with crypto is that you know the beauty of contracts with homes and other tangible assets, those contracts are bound by the court system. So if someone hacks something, and it's obviously been done because we've seen cryptocurrency stolen, and my home is on the blockchain, and it's irreversible. That was one of the main selling points of cryptocurrency, was that it's irreversible. How do I get it back? I mean, the sheriff's not going to go over. And wow, my Philly accent just came out. Go over.
There we go.
He's not
Welcome
going
back.
Over. I really do believe, and I own crypto still, just because I haven't gotten around to selling it. But I do think that it was just a unique environment for charlatans to take people's money.
Well, and especially when some of these cryptocurrencies don't have a utility, and I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
Like there's some that are, you know, and look, stocks go up and down too. You could say the same thing about any stock owner.
Mm-hmm.
But with Ethereum and Bitcoin, they have some sort of utility to them, mm-hmm. probably more so than, I was at the T360 conference and Stefan Swampel's giving out Shiba Inu to everybody. And it's worth, it would have like 10x, but it's still worth like 1/10 of like 1 cent. And I'm like, why are they even making it? I think it costs more to make the coin.
Well, yeah, exactly. So like when you have something where like, let's say I sell to Stacy, right? Stacy is to count on that someone else is going to pay more for it, where like you said, it doesn't necessarily have a utility. Like it's like a stamp or something.
Or
however,
a piece of
the
artwork.
Stamp's tangible. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. But then that's tangible. So I think that it ends up somewhere in some corner of the internet with some billion in the billions of cap, but like it's not going to be a $1 trillion thing that everyone was hoping for. I think the cool story about it, maybe like the anti-turkey, was all the people that made money on Wall Street bets when they did all the like GameStop stuff. That was like a banding together of people, and I think that couldn't have happened if we didn't have that anti-establishment movement.
Sure.
And a lot of people, good working class people, made a lot of money.
Yeah.
I'm always glad to see those stories. So that's really good. I mean, crypto is, I still don't get it. I've tried to learn about it. I just, you know, and if I don't know enough about something, and I think a lot of people fall into the other category, I don't invest in it. There's a lot of people that have no idea about crypto. I mean, that I know bought it, and I'm and Now, some people do understand it and bought it, and it didn't work out, too, so that can happen also. So,
but the real estate market's going to crash. So they don't want to buy housing.
Yeah. Right, right.
But they'll buy crypto.
That's funny. Not funny for Ben, because he owns crypto.
I own some still, yes.
I do, too, full disclosure, but yeah. But I own a couple.
Stacey's been holding out on this whole time. I didn't even know any of this.
I'm a crypto watcher. I like to look at everything.
What kind of crypto do you guys own?
Bitcoin. Ethereum. Okay. And I also bought an NFT where basically that NFT gives me unlimited access to a club of, it's a community of golfers that also was spawned from an apparel brand. So when they have tournaments, if I want to play, I have to show my NFT to get access to be in that tournament. And then I also sometimes will get benefits like early access to apparel drops and stuff like that. I didn't buy it for the artwork, although it is a piece of art. It's just no one cares about it.
Well, you're also an avid golfer, though. So I now that you're unpacking this, I think that has a lot of value to you as someone that I want to golf in these tournaments. I want to have access. It's no different than joining a private club.
Totally. But like I didn't need an NFT for it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that part I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't need the NFT. I could have just been a part of the club and given them a few $100.
Okay.
So my crypto's in a startup. It's a sports betting platform that you utilize your crypto.
Mm. Interesting.
For betting.
Oh, that's cool.
Are you not going to tell us the name? Is this like an off-air thing?
DFS Mafia.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's a startup. They just went live like a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but they've been working on this for a couple of years.
Sounds legal based on
it's
the
legal,
name of it.
And and he's got like all the patents on it. So, but it's the first and only of its kind.
Well, sports betting is legal in Pennsylvania.
I'm going to invest in something. Mafia better be in the title.
Mafia and betting.
That's right. Yeah, mafia and betting. It's perfect.
The sports betting industry now.
It's huge.
My cousin makes like $10 bets all weekend, and I mean, I see people making a lot more than that, but. That's exciting. I think that can make a lot more sense. And I like the golf thing for you because I know you were obsessed with golf. And again, you probably could have joined the club, but I don't think it's that bad of a purchase now that you're telling us more about it.
Yeah, I mean, it has some utility, I guess. But the NFT portion itself, turkey.
Okay. All right, so I have a couple turkeys here. Let me know what you think of these. Number one is kind of in the same vein as you guys. Anyone that bought land in the metaverse, it is down 61% mm-hmm. since November.
There's people that paid over $1 million.
Snoop Dogg has a house there. We've all heard about that. But most interestingly to me, Mark Cuban, who he's an enthusiast for crypto, he said basically you're an idiot if you bought in the metaverse. Combined sales on four major platforms for the metaverse land was $501 million in 2021. And it's down 61%. So the peak average for a plot of land was $37,000. It's down to $14,000. That's a big loss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. That
what do you
something...
do with the land in the metaverse? You put on your Oculus goggles and just sit in your house? Is that how it works? You might know more than me.
Have you ever seen the movie Ready Player One?
No.
You should see that movie. First of all,
I'm watching like Cocomelon.
I know,
and,
but Steven Spielberg. Best filmmaker of all time.
It's the television domination of my three children is the problem.
You should watch that movie after they go to sleep, and basically that's what the metaverse would ultimately become. So there is an alternate reality that feels very worthy of our time, emotions, energy, focus, enthusiasm. And so I think that's what people thought they were getting in on the ground floor. Also, keep in mind, more people bought like Rolexes in 2021, 2022 than like ever.
Yeah.
So like people had cash to throw around. So all these get rich quick things, people had a little more discretionary money. So
there's a lot of cash in the system and people mm-hmm. couldn't do anything. So that's a very, very well-founded point. So that's my turkey one. Number two, this one's going to speak to all of us here. Anyone that said, marry the house, date the rate.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel about? I mean, I think that is the dumbest thing. Because people are just assuming you can refinance and get a lower rate and all that. And there's a way to say that where you don't sound like an idiot and are actually helping people. But most folks didn't even go that far. They were just doing a dancing TikTok video pointing at some words to the latest Katy Perry song.
I heard an agent who sold $500 million worth of real estate last year say that at a chairman's dinner last week at a company's forum that I won't mention, but you can figure it out.
You can tell us off. Oh, my gosh.
You can figure it out if you go to my Instagram. I guess my question for you is, what do you hate so much about it? The the reduction down to the to that scenario, or do you actually hate the advice at its core?
No, I like the advice of that you're buying into the asset long term and the rate can vary and you can refinance. That saying makes it sound like it's a guarantee. Like when I hear date, you know what I think? You can dump it and pick up somebody. That's not how it works. You got to let the market play out a little bit. And then a lot of these people think rates are going to come back down to 3-4%. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And also, what if it takes 2 years?
Yeah, and what if they can't afford the house?
Or the appraisal comes in way less and you have to actually put way more money down to get that refi.
It's irresponsible advice without giving all the details. That's my problem with it. It's just like saying, hey, don't worry about it. We can get out of the deal. You know, you talked about people wanting to inspect homes. I don't worry about it. We got to waive the inspection to get the home. I think it's educating folks about the risk in that. Mm-hmm. And then if they still make the decision, awesome. And if they don't, that's awesome too. Mm-hmm. It's just educating people a little better than a 30-second reel on Instagram expecting folks to flood your inbox with DMs that they want to buy a house.
So just backing up a bit, was that your dating philosophy? Just kind of like going into it, I can just dump it.
Yeah, no. Not at all. You can ask my wife that. So we've been together a long time. So... I'm not playing the field like Mr. Beverly Hills super agent over here. So
realtor, you can't even, you got to get it.
Super agent is,
okay, fine, I'll change it for you.
No, it's all good. So the last turkey I got here is the president of FIFA. This Qatar World Cup is a joke. And Qatar pulled the biggest power move. They're like, hey, you know how we told you could buy beer in the stadium? Well, 2 days before, you can't do it anymore. Sorry, guys. Yeah. Budweiser got totally screwed on that deal. Mm-hmm. He had this speech at the beginning of the World Cup. Did you guys see this?
No.
It basically said, insert whatever minority group is out there. And he said, I am those people. And to me, I found it like extremely offensive because he doesn't know what it's like being any one of those groups. And he went on. And it's just such a corrupt organization. Oh my God. People are living in shipping containers outside these stadiums. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They had basically slaves that built. I mean, I don't even know how this is still legal, but people are watching.
I think he did have an explanation for that.
Well,
he made it seem that they're doing them such a great thing by them, you know, allowing them to work here to build this stadium, and they can go home and provide for their families. He made it like such a positive.
Well, not when they die, they can't provide for their families.
Right.
I mean, that was ridiculous. And there was people, I saw this on Twitter, there was a couple reporters that came in with like a soccer with like a rainbow behind it, and rainbows were banned from you wearing at the stadium, even though it was supposed to be. Like, it's 2022. Mm-hmm. What is going on here? And I think that to me is probably the biggest turkey of the year. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody cares because they want to watch the World Cup.
This show changed in the second segment. Like, it just changed to a complete, it's a different genre. It's a different vibe.
Well, good thing we're taking a break. So on that note, those are the turkeys of the year. I'm sticking by the metaverse one. That was my number one turkey.
I like it.
All right, this is Tool Time Real Estate Radio. We're coming back. We're talking about Netflix star Ben Balak from the agency, Beverly Hills super realtor, and Philadelphia native. Thanks for coming on, man. We will be right back in a couple minutes on Tool Time Real Estate Radio.
You shouldn't have to deal with all the red tape when getting your mortgage from a big or online bank. At Mortgage America, we have access to big bank money, but with the personalized and detailed service of a local bank. We are here in your community and ready to serve with fast settlements, low down payment options, and first-time homebuyer programs. Pre-approval is free, no costs or commitments. For more information, visit our website at mymortgageamerica.com or give us a call at 610-439-8000.
Mortgage America,
NMLS 128501. I'm Tom of the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Main Line. If you're thinking of becoming a real estate agent in the greater Philly area, I have a special offer for you. Our team did $165 million of volume in 2021, making us the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania and a top 1% team nationally. Our agents love us because we offer them a successful career, a great life, and an unbeatable culture. Agents who've been with us for at least a year average 30-plus sales. Even our brand new agents average 17 to 24 sales a year. We offer proven systems and expert training. We help you set more appointments and sell more houses. Now, here's the offer. If you don't have a real estate license yet, we offer real estate scholarships so you can get one for free. Check it out at realestatescholarshipprogram.com or visit the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline at tomtool.com. That's tom, tool with an E, .com. Get more out of your real estate career and remember the real estate golden rule. You always get more when you work with Tom Tool.
Have you considered a career in real estate? Do you want control over your income? Whether you have a license or not, call us today at 610-692-6976 or visit TomTool.com. Join our team, the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline.
When you're getting a mortgage, you shouldn't have to sacrifice great service just to get a great rate. At Mortgage America, we've been lending with this philosophy for over 35 years. We have access to great low rates without the complications and delays of big or online banks. We're a local Pennsylvania lender with loan officers that you can actually meet. As PHFA's number one lender, we specialize in all residential mortgage programs, including first-time buyer programs and low-down payment options. For your free pre-approval, call us at 610-439-8000 or apply online at mymortgageamerica.com.
Mortgage America is equal housing, NMLS 128501.
All right, all right. Welcome back to Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM. I'm Tom Tool. She's Sarah Time, and she's Stacey Mitchell. We've got Gabe behind the camera, and we all work at the Tom Tool Sales Group at RE/MAX Mainline, the number one RE/MAX team in Pennsylvania since 2018. And we've got the one and only Netflix star of Buying Beverly Hills, but most importantly, extremely competent, aspired expert in the super competitive market of Beverly Hills. The Beverly Hills super realtor himself. Apparently it's realtor, not realtor, like we've been saying for 21 years now on my part. Ben Balak is here. You can just Google his name. He'll come up. So Ben, I'm glad you came on, number one. Thank you for doing this. Ben is from the area, from Philadelphia, grew up on the main line. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell everyone how you ended up growing up on the main line to selling real estate in Beverly Hills?
Well, my dad grew up in Havertown and my mom grew up in Radnor. So that's how we ended up nearby.
That's how it works around here.
Yeah. I matured late in life. I'm a late bloomer to everything, to be honest. I didn't do well in school early. So I ended up at Penn State Altoona for 1 year, which, no one should go there. Don't go to Altoona.
There's many parts of Pennsylvania
driving
to not go
keep
to.
Keep driving. And my mom told me that she and my stepfather were moving out to California and I was coming, and I you know, in those days, Philadelphia was the center of the universe for me. I was like, I'm not going to no La La Land, you know. Anyway, she took me out there to go see some schools, and I was like, I can study here.
This'll do.
Quick sell.
Yeah, and USC, UCLA, they don't take you as a sophomore transfer, so I ended up at San Diego State. I was there for 3 years, and literally I graduated on a Saturday. I moved the next Monday because as a Philly guy, it just like San Diego wasn't really my vibe, and I wanted to get into being an adult. I started while I was in college, I was pursuing a career in acting. I got into the unions, and I then spent the next probably 12 years giving everything in my body to pursuing a career in entertainment. I got to a point where I was in my early-ish 30s, and I had a great agent. I had been on TV multiple times. I actually even started a feature film, I just was like, I'm hating this energy, and there were casting offices that had put me on shows that, like, wouldn't bring me in for role of realtor when there was some, and I was, that for me at that point, it was the, that was kind of like the final thing. I was working in hospitality. I was at Wolfgang Puck's flagship. I was blind tasting wine 5 days a week for 5 years.
Wow.
I was a sommelier, and, I just felt that Wolfgang Puck, considering I was personally accounting for 25% of the annual wine sales alone, was like, you know, benefiting from my sales more than I was. So someone said, you should try real estate. I knew nothing about it. I've learned everything about homes that I know about them from inspectors. On day one, I felt like everyone was speaking Japanese at an office meeting. And excuse me, now 11, 12 years later, I find myself at the agency in Beverly Hills where I've been in the last 7 years. So, yeah, that's it.
So there's a lot, there's a couple other, you know, I mean, Ryan Serhant comes to mind, actor turned realtor. Mm-hmm. I'm really going to work on saying this properly. So,
good luck.
I don't think it's going to go well. I get the sales part because I think there's a lot of people, and I think Stacey and Sarah, your stories are probably pretty similar. You were selling something else and felt like this was a better venue to build a career. So what advice do you have for someone that's kind of feeling that way or not happy with where they're going and real estate kind of piques their interest? Because, mm-hmm. you're one of the ultimate success stories when it comes to this. And there's also the 87% that don't make it out of the business in the first 5 years.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I did build my business from scratch. My why at the time was getting out of the restaurant and getting out of that life that I just like was not, it wasn't serving me anymore. So because I had a strong why with an emotion attached to it, I could really go hard in the paint. And I got in 2011 and in LA at that time, as a new agent who you work with buyers, mm-hmm. no one was buying, no one could get loans, everyone's paying cash. I turned to my mentor at the time and I said, I think it's knock or die for me. And he was like, I don't know what you mean. I was like, I think I have to go door to door because it's going to be the only way I'm going to talk to people. So there are parts of the Hollywood Hills where like literally I decided, I was like, no one's home during the day. I'm going at 6 o'clock because people are going to be making dinner. And I was like braving my life, like no sidewalks, no lights really, because there was no way it wasn't going to work. And in fact, luckily for me, the restaurant closed for 3 months to be renovated and they laid us all off. And I went on unemployment and I basically like was charging. I did not go out, no socializing. I charged all meals and I took the unemployment money and paid the minimum every month. I didn't get in trouble or anything, but I just did nothing except work. And then my very first escrow took 5 months to close, which never happens. And it hasn't happened since.
So that's brutal.
Yeah, it was like a trial by fire. But yeah, I mean, because I was from Philly and my sphere of influence were poor actors and restaurant people, none of them were going to ever buy or sell. And in fact, none of them ever did. So I had to go out and prospect like a lunatic. And I held hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of open houses. And so for the person that's looking to get into real estate that thinks it's going to be a part-time gig, wrong gig. I went from something where 99% of people fail to 80%. You have to ask yourself, what are you going to do when that one lead calls you and says, everyone from Sony is moving to LA and I need you to send me houses and you're out to dinner with your family at 8 o'clock mm-hmm. on a Friday night. So... this is not a job for those that are going to stand in the corner. You got to get in the ring, and it is a long runway. It was for me. My first deal, it took me like I think about like 9 months to get my first check. So,
well, that was a tough time. I mean, I went through that market too, and it's you know that when we had that great recession, whatever they call it, from that 2008 to like about 2012, 2013 mm-hmm. kick, it was really challenging. So. What I love about what you just said, I can't tell you, and we've talked about this on the show here, how many successful agents, you know, they see you, you've got this Netflix show, which I want to talk about in a second here, all this stuff.
Yeah, hurry up.
Well, we have an hour.
Okay,
so
just making sure.
That's next. But that's why we had you on. the whole point of this is that this is how all the successful people start. Have you heard anything different from a successful agent, you two? I mean, we've talked to a lot of people here. It's always... get on the phones, knock doors. Sarah's been kicking butt with door knocking. She took 3 listings over the past 6 months from it. No one wants to do it, right? I mean, you go out every week. Like, it's a plan. You're on the phone constantly.
Oh, my God. Let me just tell you really quick. So my first listing was from an attorney that I knew from waiting on at Spago. And he was like, I have a deal for you. And he emailed me. He'd always go back and forth. He was an attorney in several states. He's like, I have these clients who live in Florida. They have this place, and they think it's... you know, they want to sell it, and it's basically yours because they told me to find the real estate agent. I was like, boom. And so I went to go see it. It was in Koreatown. Basically, it was like the front was a 2-bedroom, 1-bath house, and then in the back there was this like very weird and eerie building that had 3 1-bedroom, 1-bathroom apartments in it. And they thought it was worth $1 million. It was worth $500,000. We somehow got them there. They were saying they were going to move into it. They had no idea that there were boards on the windows, whatever, but... during the time frame I had this listing, I had to buy bolt cutters because squatters locked me out of my own listing. There was a gate, a drive-on gate. They locked me out 4 times. One time I went inside, I had the owner pay to put metal gates on this place, not in a good part of town, and they just kept re-breaking in. And then even though the doors weren't broken into, I would go in and there'd be a half-drank beer inside, like they were tormenting me. One time I went in, there was a note on the a handwritten note, which I appreciate the personal nature.
That's
of the
nice. Yeah. So Brian Buffini?
Yeah, and on the note, it said, I'm written in pencil. I'm coming back here but no one will read this because no one comes here. And guess what the paperweight was?
What?
A half-eaten cheeseburger.
Oh, my gosh.
So people may see the show. They may see listings I have in Bel Air or Beverly Hills, Hollywood Hills. If you go to my page, you'll see like hundreds, 400 transactions or something I've touched. Mm-hmm. But like, yo, it's been grimy and ratchet. And like, I started at the bottom and I still cold call. I'm still now planning out a door knocking for next year. I'm going to hit the streets.
Well, and I, that's what people need to do to succeed. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people at your company even that are doing mm-hmm. the same thing. So I love that. And I think it's great for all the agents to hear this because they think, oh, he works in LA. He works in Beverly Hills. He doesn't have to do that stuff. I'd argue you got to do it more
way
to make
more.
A dent there because the market's more competitive. There's so many people trying. We've talked about this off air. So I love that. We got a couple minutes left here. I want to talk about buying Beverly Hills. So tell us about the show. What's it like? It's on Netflix. Why should we watch it? I know you've become like this like cult star with the show from the reviews I've been reading that my wife sends me because I don't pay attention.
You haven't watched it.
I have not watched it.
You want me to pitch you to watch my show on your show?
Yes.
I would say that the elevator pitch is that most reality shows that are ensemble casts like ours is they all get tanked. They tear each other down. They sober up. They apologize. And then they repeat. Our show's not like that. Yes, there is kind of this nepotistic thing that they dove into because Mauricio has three daughters. Mm-hmm. Well, he actually technically is, I guess, four daughters if you include Farrah. So there's a part of that, but you basically have like these four rookies who are trying to make it, and they basically struggle on the show. One of them does a little bit of business through his family. They give him a listing, right? And then you've got Mauricio and I and John Grauman kind of as the mentors. And, you know, there's a point. Most of these real estate shows, you'll see, like, the commission on the bottom left, this big gross commission. And in I break it down, like, where all the money goes. And a
Smart.
Lot of people message me. They're like, they were like, thank you for doing that because it also helps consumers to chop us down on our livelihood because mm-hmm. they think the gross commission is our take home.
Right.
I just think that we were just so much more grounded and we helped each other. Of course, there's a little bit of drama, but it's not like selling Sunset. And the last thing I'll say is just from a differentiator is that on the show, you can see that deals just we don't get the listing Tuesday morning and it sells Wednesday afternoon. We're talking about losing listings that we spend tens of thousands of dollars on marketing. And then sometimes you got to hand it over to the next person who's going to get the reduction.
And time.
Yeah.
And overhead.
Yeah, all the overhead.
Everything. That's great.
So I think that's why it's been really well received. Twitter is a very mean place. And at least for me, they've been very kind so far. So I'm so grateful for that.
So I'm going to tune in now. You sold me, and I'm not an easy. I'm being very serious with you here. Luckily, Thanksgiving's coming up. I have some free time to dive into Netflix. So that's really cool. How did you become the super realtor in Beverly Hills? Tell us about. This is one of my favorite stories. We got like 2 minutes left here.
Okay.
Ben is known as the Beverly Hills super realtor. Tell us about this.
I went to a mastermind. Came out of the mastermind and said, I need to make content. Who cares? Like if your sales price, a list price, is 102%. Like literally, the consumers don't care.
Yes.
So even though I believe I'm very good and tactical and nuanced in my business practice, I needed to concentrate on being known. So we started filming tours of my listings and I came out and literally it just sarcastically came out of my mouth because I thought I needed an intro and a name of the channel kind of. So I literally just was like, hey guys, Ben Belak here, Beverly Hills super realtor. And the thing is, it's so stupid, but it gets everyone's reaction, including my camera guy, and it's stuck. And literally everyone remembers it. So I've kind of kept saying it.
You've been called the super realtor in public by other people you didn't know, correct?
I went to the end of a baby shower the other day and some old woman just ran across the room and she's all super, super. And I think she couldn't remember the realtor part.
That's okay. That is branding. Ben, thank you for coming on. Just Google Ben Belak. Check out his show, Buying Beverly Hills, on Netflix.
Yeah, we need a season two.
Well, I'm all for it. I'll get the CEO of Netflix
you guys
on
the
phone.
Watch it
we'll use some
end.
Phil Jones and NLP on him.
Yes!
We'll get him ready to go. So you want to follow Ben, just look him up on Instagram. You can follow Sarah. She's at Ty_TyTime. You can follow Stacy at @2Mitchko, or you can follow me at TomTool3RD, at TomTool3rd. We're streaming live every week on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram. Make sure to subscribe, follow, all that good stuff. And we'll be back next week on Tool Time Real Estate Radio on WWDB 860 AM.